So I'll be talking about the role of volatiles in blueberry flavors and how these compounds can come together and be responsible for some of the novel aromas that we see in our germplasm. Okay, so I've been to a lot of blueberry talks throughout the conference, but I'll tell you a little bit more about why they're so big and where the demand is coming from. So health-wise, blueberries are considered a superfood. The anthocyanin content in blueberries is very high. This is a good thing for those of us in the blueberry industry. Also, they're a super convenient fruit. So if I want to feed something to my kids, blueberries are super easy. I just have to wash them. Kids tend to like them. Compared to years ago, they're available more or less year-round. Prices I think are more stable than they used to be. So, but still, what is it about blueberries that consumers actually tell us they want? And so in research published in 2013 by Dr. Gilbert, who's in the room, surveys of the actual fruit quality traits that consumers told us that they wanted, the most important trait they said was flavor. So now we're going to diverge and talk a lot about flavor. Okay, so flavor is a complex trait. It's really made up of two different sets of sensory information in your body. So you're getting information coming from your taste buds. That would be sweetness, sourness, maybe some bitterness, not so much saltiness or umami, but you're also getting information from your retronasal olfactory bulb. So this is where volatiles come into play. So when you chew up a fruit, these volatiles are being released and they're drifting up your nostril, or drifting up your throat, and then being interpreted as flavor information in your brain. So this, for instance, is why humans can tell the difference between, say, a tangerine and a navel orange, because of this volatile balance difference. So my goal in my research has been mostly to evaluate whether or not consumers actually prefer this, what we call the aromatic trait that we've found in some of our germplasm. And these are individuals that we think have a really strong flavor that year after year, their flavors are consistently stronger than the rest of all the blueberries that we taste. And so we wanted to see whether or not consumers can tell this difference between regular blueberries and our aromatics, and then to actually characterize what are the volatiles that are responsible for this aromatic trait when we compare them to the rest of our germplasm and all of the other blueberries that we have. Okay, so in this first objective, all of this work was done in 2018, and actually we have 2019 data, but I'm not going to be presenting on that. So in 2018, we sampled from 21 different aromatic genotypes of blueberries and 21 non-aromatic genotypes. And so these are things that are already in the breeding program. The aromatic ones we primarily selected just because we thought, wow, these have that flavor boost that we're looking for. So we fed these to people on consumer sensory panels. These are not trained panelists, so they're not experts. They're just people walking around the UF campus. And we asked them basically a series of questions, but the most important ones for my research are whether or not they could tell a difference between the aromatic genotypes and the non-aromatics, and then do they actually prefer the aromatics. So in these panels, we had roughly 100 people participate per panel over 8 different dates, mostly in the month of April. That's when our season is for highbush blueberries in Florida. And then most of these panels, the panelists tried only 5 different genotypes per panel. And they're eating usually at least 3 berries of the genotype, because there is, of course, berry-to-berry variation. Okay, so to answer that first question, whether or not panelists can tell a difference, we had a little bit of trouble coming up with how do we ask panelists, does this have a unique flavor? So we came up with this very long question to which panelists would either answer yes or no. So some blueberries have a unique strong flavor profile more than others. Do you detect any fruity, floral, or other novel flavors in this blueberry? And so they would either answer yes or no to that. And what we found was, for the most part, we as experts or blueberry breeders that taste maybe 1,000 blueberries per day, the panel got 76% of those that we said were aromatic correct. And they got 81% of the non-aromatic genotypes correct. So basically what this tells us is, for the most part, even your average consumer can tell when you give them a berry that has the aromatic flavor. And so we regard this as a success, and we found these same results in 2019. But in terms of overall liking, this is the most important trait for us. We want people to like the blueberries. We ask them about a lot of other traits, but what we find is here the aromatics, they do a little bit better than the non-aromatics as a group, but that difference is not significant. And if we break that down by the individual genotypes, what we see is there are two different clusters. So in orange, you have the aromatics, and in blue, you have the non-aromatics. Oh, sorry, I didn't introduce the scale. So this is a liking scale that goes up to 100, and if a blueberry gets a 40, that's pretty good, because 100 is the best experience you've ever had in your entire life. So a 40 blueberry is a pretty good blueberry. So some of these aromatics are almost hitting that 40 range. And then there's also this other group of aromatic blueberries that people are not liking for whatever reason. And so when we looked at these individuals, what we saw was they either had poorer texture, lower sugar, or maybe they actually have some off volatiles. So we're not entirely sure what that difference is, but texture is definitely one of those components that we think is a big deal. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the actual biochemical components that differentiate the aromatic group of genotypes versus the non-aromatic group of genotypes. And so this work basically involves quantifying the volatile profiles of all of these blueberries, and then looking at other biochemical traits like sugars and acids, and then we also looked at physical traits like firmness. Which, I think you're all familiar with AffirmTech. Down here we have the setup by which we collect the volatiles. So this is a dynamic headspace collection apparatus. So we analyzed a large number of traits, and by grouping these different, by grouping all of the aromatics and non-aromatic genotypes together, we performed t-tests for every single trait, and we found a lot of traits, 34, that were different. But unfortunately, at least in the case of volatiles, most of these traits don't normally distribute. So we took our stats up a notch and did some bootstrapping and reduced that number of traits down that were significant. But I'll talk to you about some of the differences we found. And it's not just in volatiles. So firmness, we've had a lot of talks on firmness, but probably all of you know that a firmer blueberry is more desirable. And what we see is, in general, the aromatic blueberries were not as firm. This kind of makes sense because when I'm going out to the field and selecting for aromatics, I'm really just trying to taste those extra notes. And, you know, if the berry has acceptable texture, then I'll call it aromatic. But even our two cultivars that are released that we say have this flavor profile, Kestrel and Snow Chaser. Snow Chaser has one of the lowest firmness scores, and that explains a lot of why it consistently ranks low in our panels, because it's a small berry and the texture just isn't that good. So even though the flavor is there, you've got to have these other elements of berry quality before consumers are really going to pay extra for your flavor. Then, in looking at sugars and acids, which are some of the most important traits to consumers, what we find is, in general, the BRICS are higher in the aromatic berries versus the non-aromatic berries, and that pH is higher or titratable acids are lower in the aromatic berries. Therefore, you're getting a higher sugar-acid balance. And I think this makes sense when I put blueberries in the scope of all fruits, because I think back to the cotton candy grape. This thing packs in a bunch of flavor, but I think the cotton candy grape has a BRICS of like 30, so that's really high BRICS. So maybe without this high sugar content, it's really hard to pick up on the volatiles for me and for regular consumers. So yes, sugar matters a lot. We quantified 84 different volatiles, and I put them all together on this wheel so that they're not so hard to look at, because they have some pretty long names. And then all of these organoleptic properties that you see here, like fruity, minty, herbal, these are coming from the Good Sense company that aggregates all of this, all of these sensory properties together. So you can look up any of your compounds and try to figure out how would this actually how is this volatile related to the profile of this berry? Okay, so we found a total of 14 different volatiles that were in higher quantities in the aromatic group of genotypes. And the two that I really want to highlight are limonene and linalool. And this is because limonene and linalool had the largest magnitude difference between the two groups, and they also were in the highest quantities in the aromatic group. So what this tells me is even though with volatiles, quantity it does not necessarily equal quality, but we think that these are two good targets, and they're two very well characterized volatiles that are already used. It's very easy to get standards for them. And if you just read the scent description, citrus, orange, fresh, sweet, that's the kind of volatile that we want to have in blueberries, because a lot of the other volatiles that are highly abundant in blueberries are things like the C6s, and those have more grassy green notes. And so if you think about what you'd rather your fruit taste like, I think I'd rather have something a little more citrus, a little more floral. Okay, so this is the group of 15 different volatiles that we found to be different among the two groups, and the only one that was actually in higher quantities in the non-aromatic group is this isopentanyl acetate or isoamyl acetate, which is actually a banana flavor, and so maybe that means that we as breeders are selecting against the banana flavor, or we don't like it. I know I personally don't like banana flavor, so maybe there's a bias there, but that was the only one that was in higher quantities in the non-aromatic group. Okay, so this research is ongoing. I don't want to say that any of these results are concrete. We have like a single year of data here that I'm displaying. But what we did find in this year's panels was that, again, consumers were able to differentiate the aromatics versus the non-aromatic groups. But in terms of the volatiles biochemistry and the trait analysis, I'm still working through that data. So when I go back to Florida, I'll be doing that. All right. I will take any questions.
We have time for one quick question again.
Yeah. Yeah, so the question is about whether or not we see a decrease in the aromatic genotypes in terms of their post-harvest life. So I'm going to say we're looking at this, and we do store all of these genotypes, even though they're tried the day after. We're thinking about changing the model and storing them longer before that we feed them to the panel. And we do store them and taste them a few weeks after, I think every week. We're tasting them. But I think it's very genotype to genotype dependent. I don't think that by having an aromatic profile, you necessarily, that those fruits are necessarily aging faster or anything. Oh, okay. What, so you're asking about the stability of the trait over time?
No, of course not. It's possible that there's more flavonoids, more aromatic,
Sorry, I don't think I understand the question. Yeah, but okay, but we haven't noted that so far. I guess it's possible. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you.